Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Sausage sandwich waiting for me at home, ready to cook. I've told you about this already, Matt.
You have, yeah.
I'm really looking forward
to it.
It's
got to beat the BAP I had at the weekend, though, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, but I don't know. Tell us all about your BAP.
It was a good 6 inches across. It was fucking massive. I reckon it had 5 sausages in it.
Wow. Is this a routine that you guys planned beforehand?
I feel like, no.
Have we started the
just
podcast?
Natural. It's just natural. Yeah, why not? It's a natural conversation.
The way you kicked into that, I was like, he's prepared like a little skit or something.
Do I look like a comedy sketch writer to you?
Yeah, no, you're definitely not.
Well, I haven't tried, have I? In a good probably 12 years. You have a sausage sandwich when you get home, Dale?
Not tonight, no. But, you know, maybe on the weekend.
Sausage sandwich is good, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't have them that often, to be honest.
Welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I'm Simon Cardy. Dale Driver, you're 2 weeks in a row.
I know, right?
Yeah. I know. Baby in
we're in the office today, though, so I'm off the baby leash.
You've abandoned your boy.
Yeah.
Matt, you've got no boy to abandon.
I do not, no.
No, but well, neither do I. We'll never abandon each other. How about that? We'll make that pact.
I won't
now.
Make that guarantee.
I wouldn't commit to that, Matt.
please, someone commit to me. let's talk about it. We've got a good few games to talk about this week. Phantom Liberty, the Cyberpunk expansion. That's a riot. We'll tell you all about that.
It's Preem.
Preem, yeah. Hey, Tume. Oh, God, we're not going to talk that again. Also, Dale's been lucky enough. Played a bit of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth as well.
Yeah, I did.
I know.
I'm excited to talk about that.
And me and Matt went to Finland a few weeks ago to check out Alan Wake 2. We might as well tell people a bit about that, I suppose, because we've been doing a month-long coverage of that. And also, Matt, you've been playing with Pinocchio, haven't you? And his big nose.
I've been fiddling about with his nose.
Okay. You made that worse than it could have been. Okay. Cyberpunk. Let's talk about that one first. Where do we start with Cyberpunk?
Describe what it is.
Cyberpunk. Well, Phantom Liberty is the expansion to Cyberpunk, much like The Witcher 3 back in the day got its Blood and Wine and Hearts of Stone expansion. This is Cyberpunk 2077's one and only expansion. And you know what? It is absolutely excellent. It is, to me anyway, and I like Cyberpunk quite a bit, the original game, but this is just head and shoulders the best thing in the game.
I've seen it already described by Rock Paper Shotgun, mm-hmm. A place with good reputation, as potentially one of the best expansion packs of all time.
It might be one of I don't play many expansions because I tend to sort of leave games when I'm finished with them. But I think it might be one of the best ones I've ever played.
It's one of. I think Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine are probably a little... The Hearts of Stone story is very, very good. And the Blood and Wine expansion, just the whole world of Tucson is amazing. Whereas Cyberpunk, you're kind of getting... It's less of... You're not getting a whole new world like you do with Blood and Wine and The Witcher. You're getting a new area of Night City, which still does feel like Night City, but... is different enough, and it's not It's located in the Pacific section of Cyberpunk, if you haven't played it.
Which was fairly underdeveloped in the original.
It's almost like, I kind of, because I've been playing this for so long now, I can't remember what it looked like before. But I do kind of want to go back and look at a map where I feel like it might have been there, but it was like locked off.
Yeah, it was just like a gap in the map, basically. And at first I was like, oh, this is quite a small area. So I was expecting, you know, playing Blood and Wine and The Witcher, that's like a whole massive map to explore. Whereas at first it seems like it's quite small. It's just like the size of a district in Cyberpunk, but it's so much denser than any other area in the game, and so layered as well. When the buildings have, like, you can go up to, like, you can't go on every floor of these buildings, but some of these buildings go up to floor 99 and stuff like that. Like, and there's depths to go to, and I don't know where to start apart from the fact that it's just brilliant. And if you, even if you haven't played the Cyberpunk main game, I would kind of encourage just to play this, because it is the closest we've got to a Mission Impossible video game. And it's, to me, it's been like, for years, it's just like, why have we not, like, we've had Uncharted, which is kind of as close, I guess, to that sort of adventure spy
more
thing.
Indie, isn't it? When we came out of seeing Dead Reckoning, one of the first things I said to you was, why haven't we got a Mission Impossible video game? I know, you know, if you go back in the day, you've got Siphon Filter, right, which is sort of doing that vibe, but that's decades old at this point.
And that also felt like way more focused on just the gunplay aspects of it, whereas like Phantom Liberty, there is a lot of missions where you go long stretches where there's no gunplay required, or it's just pure
stealth.
You can
go a lot of that. I mean, the first, it's quite an action-packed opening. Like, it's almost like I played the first 2 hours of this, and I was telling people, like, it's just like a Call of Duty campaign, like, in a good way. Like, there's like an old school cinematic action first-person shooter, and it kind of does develop as you go along. It turns a bit more, times it's a bit Watch Dogs, but yeah, at times it really is just like you're playing a Bond game, and they lean in heavy. Like, there's some big Mission Impossible elements to it that I'm not necessarily going to spoil, that you're like, okay, yeah, you've seen Mission Impossible. And like, even the way this, you know, there's like big Bond moments that I know I've finished the main campaign. There are different ways you can go, but you are one mission away from the end, I think.
I would have finished it if it wasn't for a stupid little baby.
Oh, babies. Oh, yeah. God.
I will say, though, that I think this is the best that Cyberpunk has been.
Absolutely.
And I loved Cyberpunk. Like, I finished it through twice, like on PS4, and then when it came to, well, sorry, like the old gen version on PS5, and then the new next gen version. I loved it, really enjoyed the game. But I think they've really found their sweet spot here with how missions can be at their best in this system. And I think part of that is largely because I play as a Netrunner character anyway. Mm-hmm. But it leans into the idea of implementing technology to like achieve your goals and espionage.
It's a real Cyberpunk story, whereas the main campaign story is, it's set in a Cyberpunk world, but the story is kind of like, it does have a lot.
It's a smash the system story, but it's actual tie into what Cyberpunk as a fictional genre is about. It never really goes much into that transhumanism.
It's kind of just corporations are bad. That's the message kind of that story. Yeah. Whereas this one has so many more elements, and you know, I didn't well up at any point in this story, but much more emotionally connected than pretty much anyone apart from like Judy and Pan Am in the main game. Like, this, you meet characters
they're not
called
even
Songbird.
Really the main game, are they? No, their main relations are mostly the side stuff.
Whereas there's a character called Songbird who you meet the first second of this DLC. She's who phones you to start off the Phantom Liberty expansion, and she's a great character. Idris Elba, very good as Solomon Reed as well.
Really
and,
good,
yeah. Yeah, noticeably good, especially when you compare to Keanu, who I think, to be fair, to his credit, is better in the expansion. I think that's mainly because the writing in the expansion is at times much better than the main game.
I think he says his lines are better.
Yeah.
I still think his delivery is just as bad. And honestly, the worst part about Cyberpunk across the board for me is the fact that Johnny Silverhand is in it all the goddamn time.
Well, crucially, this story is not about him. So it's good. He does pop up every now and then to be like, you know, that devil on your shoulder sort of thing.
Yeah, just for a little chat every now and again.
But yeah, just the mission design is just so good. And you can tell kind of Dogtown, like I said, it's a dense, like packed area where you kind of, throughout the campaign and the side missions, which are also very good, they visit like all the landmarks you see, and there's a reason for every building to be there. And you can tell that this area was built for these missions and the story, rather than, you know, say, Night City in the main game felt like, we've built this amazing looking city, but we've got to put missions into it somehow. And there's whole areas of that city in the main game you don't even need to visit. Like, the whole north half of that map is, like, kind of redundant for a lot of the game. Like, this is such... It's just such better game design. Yeah. It's just... This felt like what Cyberpunk should have been all along. And, yeah, I've just... I think it took me about 14 hours to go through all the main missions with a few side bits trickled in. So you're getting a fair amount of game here as well.
The thing I'd say about Dogtown is, although I agree, I think it's like extremely dense and it's packed and it's really got really cool style. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's like kind of almost like Las Vegas-y, but mixed with like piers and beachy elements as well.
A little bit,
and
then
they're like grimy sort of.
It's almost more like Atlantic City in that way, sort of. Like,
But I also think it's perhaps a little bit cartoonish, like how it's all so tightly packed in. How, like, whereas the actual Night City felt more like we're going to build a city. Well, this is we're going to build a game zone.
It's noticeably a much more hostile place. Like, you feel like it is described as a combat zone. So it's basically run by this character called Kurt Hansen, who is basically like a militia leader who owns this part, has taken over this part of the town, basically. So it's a much more like... Whereas Night City, you never... And this is part of the 2.0 update. You never really got in trouble just by driving around. No one would just have a go at you. Like, in GTA, like, sometimes some gangs just don't like it. They'll open fire, like in San Andreas and stuff like that. Whereas in Dogtown, sometimes you just accidentally pull your gun out or you drive a bit too close to people and that alert will start growing. Like, it's a dangerous place to just hang out. And it's kind of like, it keeps you on your toes. I do kind of, sometimes I just like walking around. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I just wanted to walk around. You didn't have to have a pop at me here.
Yeah.
But like, it does make it more fun. Like, you're always, you know, you're always on alert.
It's also got a weird vibe. For a second, I almost forgot that Cyberpunk wasn't a post-apocalyptic game, because there's certain regions of it and certain areas of it. I understand, like, you know, it's not lawless, but it's got its own like systems and stuff, so some parts of it have run down, but there's like an old football stadium that's just been completely like destroyed and now it's turned into sort of ramshackly sort of shantytown, like, market sort of thing. It's definitely got a different vibe, whereas the main Night City is a lot of it is shiny neon chrome.
It still just looks amazing as well. This game looks, the art style of this game is just still like relatively unmatched, I think. And the photo mode it's my favorite photo mode. I spent far too long in it. And going back to some of the missions, I just like, some of them are just like standout missions. There is the one that is obviously a James Bond mission that's kind of like an infiltration mission. There's one that's very Mission Impossible where some tech is involved. And then you haven't played it yet, Del, because we should point out there's a distinct branch in this story and there's a big choice you get to make. I'm going to play the other branch tonight, just see how different it is. But I've heard it's like drastic, like so much that the whole last mission is basically a completely different mission.
Okay.
The last mission of the way I went, which we've both gone, which feels the more natural. It fits the character of V more to pick this
exactly
route.
I did take a second to choose.
Yeah.
And my rationale on the decision was, I feel this serves V better.
It's a genuine grey area choice. Where this is the good and this is the bad. I was generally like, is this person right?
That CDPR's narrative team have been incredibly good at for their entire existence. Is even going back as far as The Witcher 1.
Yeah.
A lot of the choices. And it sounds like, I'm assuming, does this immediately trigger the mission after that choice?
You have to wait around, because you know, sometimes you're like, wait for a call. But like, it instantly triggers what happens in the second half of that mission you're playing. Yeah.
It's just one of those things that I can remember back in The Witcher 1. It would do things where you really had no idea what the right choice was in this. Mm-hmm. They were just two very plainly think, are you going to do left or are you going to do right?
Yeah.
And then you choose it and then it wouldn't let you know what decision you'd actually made until about 3 hours later in the game, and you'd be like, oh, remember that thing that you did that you thought was possibly inconsequential? No, an entire region has collapsed because of it.
The no spoilers, but the last mission of this game is unbelievably good. Like, it's it kind of brings everything that's good in Phantom Liberty together, like the spectacle of it, the spy nature of it, just the action of it. Like, it is just a full, like, last 20 minutes of, like, a Mission Impossible or Bond film. Like, everything's now kicking off. Everything's coming together. And they hit it as well with, like, the choice you have to make at the end of that as well. Like, another genuine of, like, oh, I don't know who's right, who's wrong, who to, like, you know. It nails that whole, like, no one is good, no one is bad in this world. The main campaign kind of, it was a bit more black and white. I was like, oh, Arisaka, they're bad. Johnny, you're meant to kind of side with him, but I never liked him, I think.
Like, you're meant to be sympathetic towards Johnny's
Oh, I play. Wasn't. No, I never let him have his way. You know, all the stuff where he wants to go on the date with Rogue and wants you to do this and that with him. And, you know, he's got obviously a wish for what you do with the Mikoshi stuff. Absolutely never let him have his way through that game.
Whereas characters like Solomon and Solomon Reed, who Idris Elba plays, and Songbird, and meet another cool character called Alex along the way, like, they're all just very good characters that all have demons and all have positives as well, and it's just like, oh, it's just so well written.
It sounds
designed.
Like in many respects it is, like, I always thought that I think The Witcher 3 is fabulous, but I do think that Blood and Wine is a really good, it's everything that's good about The Witcher condensed into a shorter version. But obviously Blood and Wine itself is about 30 hours long, but that's because naturally those kind of fantasy games tend to be a bit more sprawling, whereas a more kind of futuristic game, they tend to be a little bit more condensed because of the way that the spaces are designed. So it sounds like it is Blood and Wine for Cyberpunk, and it's everything that's good about that taken to its apex.
And not to completely, you know, let CD Projekt off the hook of what happened 3 years ago. Like, that game should never have launched as it is.
Oh, absolutely.
But the redemption arc is clear to see now, and this is what it should have been all along. You'd like to think now they've learned their lessons, and they've definitely learned what worked in Cyberpunk and what didn't, and taken all the good stuff for this. And now it just gets me so excited for Cyberpunk.
Well, I was just going to say that. For me, I hope this is, you know, in GTA 4, how you had the heist mission, right? And it was a highlight. And then GTA 5 was like, right, we'll build the next game around that idea. I want that to be this. I want them to take this idea, this political espionage sort of story, and build a new story using this framework for the next one. And that would leave me so excited, man. And you know, and also makes me hope that the industry learns to, you know, take their time with their games just a little bit longer. Like, if No Man's Sky and Cyberpunk had released just a year later, then it would have been a very different situation.
But Cyberpunk fans, literally, like, if you've never played Cyberpunk, this is time to jump in as well, because you've got the 2.0 update, which does, I don't think it's like some people are saying, like, change the gameplay. I don't think it changes the game completely. The new perk system is very good, and the way you get to design your character, and clearly, like, you can see what every choice makes. It's not just like 1% better SMG rate of fire. It's like you have now unlocked the ability to use these mantis blades to actually double jump was always one, but you know what I mean, they're tangible differences, not just like percentage changes a lot of the time. And the new police system's interesting as well, but like, I didn't, you know, I'm a goody two shoes a lot of the time, I don't get in trouble with the law.
So your character, right, you're about halfway through the game, and
so I was on my second playthrough, and I was, this playthrough I was going for more of like a brute character, so I invested a lot in like the body stuff and had these big gorilla arms that set people on fire when I hit them and
but
stuff.
I'm just
like
trying
that.
To get a sense of, so I started this DLC where it's an end game save, it's level 50, so I'm completely maxed out when I started. The level cap does increase to 60 now, but I did, one complaint I do find is I just found it supremely easy, not a challenge in any way. But that might be because I'm max level and I've got all the perks. And like I said, I've built this Netrunner character. I've got all my perks in that. Yeah. So I'm like, just an
I do think this,
machine.
Not that you can play this game, and that's the beauty of this game. You can choose a character and build them completely different like we have. But for like the genre and a lot of the missions of Phantom Elite are set up for you to be more of a hacker, Netrunner sort of character.
But do you
it fits that vibe, I think.
But do you recommend playing the game at any level? It's like, can you play at any level? That's what I'm trying to get.
Well, you have to get to... Well, you have to be either like halfway through the campaign to trigger it, or from the moment you can just start Phantom Liberty and they'll give you a level 20 character that you can build.
So level 20 is recommendation.
That was about where I was in the main campaign.
But I imagine it scales anyway.
Like. Yeah, I didn't find it. There's times where some of those fights are very difficult, especially if you don't go the quiet option, which my character didn't really have the option to a lot of the time. But yeah, you mentioned the gigs and the side missions as well, like. Also, just very good.
My favorite stuff about the original Cyberpunk, because I was obsessed with getting the platinum for it, I meant doing all the gigs, but I had a great time doing it because I just found every gig was its own little bite-sized, like 10-15 minute, you know, not dystopian, just future story, you know? And I found some of them were so unique and weird, and they all have their own little choices and permutations.
They've got the balance perfect, because there's so many weird characters you meet in like the gigs and the side missions in Dogtown, because the main story itself is quite serious and quiet. There's not many laughs along the main campaign path. Whereas, yeah, the little side gigs, like, have you done one where it's like at one of those brain dance shops and there's these two
and there's the guy who's confused about who he is.
Yeah. And he kind of got lost in a brain dance, which is, if you don't know what cyberpunk, a brain dance is basically these recorded realities you can slot into your own brain and live someone else's memories. And there's, someone who basically, not pretends, but basically thinks they are someone else because they got caught in one of them or something.
And
that's
your mission
funny.
Is to, like, speak to the actual person.
I haven't played it yet, but I just triggered to start the one you talked about where you have to, is it like help a group of like young football players?
So there's an underground, it's almost like a breeding camp for like young football. When I say football, I mean soccer as well. Yeah. Like young football players who are like being chromed up and like enhanced and they're like little kids and they're being like sold in like a black market sort of situation.
Having their legs chopped off to have robotic legs.
It's like saying, oh, you want to buy this. And they were actually doing like an auction for these players and stuff. It was like very, very seedy, very underground, but also had like this real like sort of weird, almost like, I don't know, the fact that they were football players made it funny as well. Yeah. It's very silly. But yeah, there's all sorts of cool, weird things going on like that.
Yeah. Anyway, Phantom Liberty for Cyberpunk 2077. Just play it.
Yeah.
I just like, I can't. It's one of the best things I've played.
I think
this
if
year,
you've ever been interested in Cyberpunk, like, this is the perfect illustration of how good Cyberpunk can be.
And if someone was interested but had heard a load of, you know, bad stuff from previously, would you recommend they just started afresh with the 2.0 and get to Phantom Liberty naturally?
I think the context that world helps, and because they do mention like gangs and like things in this world. If you just started Phantom Liberty without playing any of what the roughly 15 probably hours
stuff,
before
the
that,
Johnny stuff would be weird as well without the context of what's going on. Why is this man?
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like you'd want to have it build a character in that world a bit before just entering Dogtown and be like, what is going on? Like, who are these factions? Who are these people?
But like you said about the new perk system, like it's really fortunate for new players. They can actually like decide on what sort of character do I want to say. And you can respect yourself now as well at one point. If you decide,
I always respect myself.
You can choose to reset it. I think you get one for free and you can reset it all and then try a new system out, which you couldn't do in the original from what I remember.
I can't wait to get home and try the other branch of this and see where it goes. And I can't wait for you to play it, Max. I know you're going to love it.
Yeah, well, I've got, from what I understand, two quests in Baldur's Gate 3 left, so it'll be straight on to this once I'm done.
I mean,
there.
Baldur's Gate is running away with my game here at the moment. I don't think we haven't talked about it, actually, Arjun, like if Phantom Liberty, it can't be game because it's not a game in itself.
I mean, if we had an but expansion it's one of the best, DLC of the year.
I mean, it's easily that. But
isn't it weird how, like, Tears of the Kingdom and Starfield at the start of this year were like, the dead certs locks to be game of the year.
People
and now like
Baldur's
Gate just came out of nowhere, didn't it? And people love it.
It's going to be Baldur's Gate versus Tears of the Kingdom, isn't it? That's the big one. Early next year, though, could Final Fantasy VII Rebirth set an early mark, Dale, do you think, for game of the year for next year?
I don't think in game of the year because, if I start off slightly negative...
I mean, Remake was near the top of our list, though.
Wouldn't have been for me, personally, but I do think it's really good. I really enjoyed it. I just had some issues with it. And I think the biggest, if you wanted to poke apart an issue of Rebirth from what I played, is that it is the same game still. In terms of the combat and the systems, they've added a couple of new, like, flair moves and stuff, but essentially it's the same vibe. However, I think the most exciting thing for me is the promise of what they can deliver on from the original. So obviously we were always told with Remake that it was just the Midgar section and it was like 5 hours in the original game blown out to 30 hours in this. Whereas this one, they've all but confirmed that it's the end of Disc 1, which is, I don't know, 30 hours maybe of the original game if you're going at a normal pace. And then they're saying it's 100 games, and they showed in the trailer all the location you're going to get to visit. So the promise of what we're actually going to get to see is so exciting. But what I played was I played 25 minutes of the flashback section where they're going into the Mako reactor in Mount Nibble, where you get to control Sephiroth. I got to control Sephiroth for a bit as well, which is quite cool.
Did that feel naughty?
A little bit. Do you know what was slightly irritating about it was when you're in battle, obviously you can switch to Sephiroth, but as soon as you come out, you go straight back to Cloud again. I was like, I want to walk around as Sephiroth for a bit. like in the original game, in that sequence, he's obnoxiously overpowered. But that's the whole essence of that sequence, is to show you how much of a soldier he actually was. And then the other section I got to play was just before you arrive at Junon, which is a small fishing village underneath it. And there's an open world section there. So I got a taste of what the open world section was like. In
the open world, is it like, is it really open?
No.
I just have one quick. Is it at least better than Final Fantasy 16's open areas in quotation marks?
So I would say it feels familiar to Final Fantasy 16's bigger open world sections.
That's not what I want to hear.
But I will say they were very clear on that. What I was seeing wasn't the finished thing, and I know everyone says that, but it genuinely did feel like they were walling me off a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't go to certain bits, but it was very densely packed, way more densely packed than 16 okay. is. So I felt like I couldn't go for 10 seconds or so without another building being there, more people to talk to, and more things to do. And there was lots of monster hunts, so it's like thrown around that area, and it felt like. If anything, I'd say that area almost felt over-designed. Like, it's so much going on in that tiny little ecosystem. And when you compare it to the original, where it's just all flat green mm-hmm. landscapes, mm-hmm. it's obviously, like, worlds apart. But essentially, yes, it did feel a lot like the same game. Although now we get to play as new characters. I got to play as Red 13 as well.
And he can ride a chocobo, right?
He rides a chocobo, which is super weird. Yeah, you see the way his back is arched.
This is probably a better chat for you and Matt to have, because I've not got past this point in the original Final Fantasy VII ever, so I don't know the story apart from one or two obviously big things that most people know about this game. But from what you could tell, like, is it? Staying pretty loyal to that story from what you've seen so far?
From what I saw, it was almost exactly the same, except for, I don't know, what do you reckon? Is it spoilers to say what I saw at the end of it?
You can fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want to listen to
Dale. Well, they're letting people write it in previews. Mm-hmm.
It's just the introduction to how you meet Yuffie. So from the original game, how you meet Yuffie was chance. Well, not if you know exactly what to do, but for a first-time player, it was pure chance. You'd have to meet her in a battle, and you'd have to say the right things, mm-hmm. and then she'd want to join your party. Whereas in this, obviously, she is a character in the game. They can't risk not letting you have her, I guess, now. Mm-hmm. So she's bolted into the story, and she replaces a character that is originally attacked by a monster, is now Yuffie instead.
Okay, cool.
So, but that's also an indication for what other things can they slightly change mm-hmm. as the game progresses? And is it going to be like the end of Remake where they made substantial changes, or has things now reset? Depending on what you think of the end of Remake as well, there's lots of theories and ideas there. But I'm really excited. Like I think I'm mostly excited, not necessarily to play the game, which sounds weird, but to revisit all the nostalgia memories and like see all these places. Like, oh my God, that's the Gold Saucer now. Mm-hmm. And like it's huge, like modern version of it, and I think, and just to see these scenes redone in a modern environment, that's what I was excited for mostly with Remake and what I'm looking forward to now. Mm-hmm.
It's nice. Like they've not been nothing that you played nor what has been in the trailer so far has been the stuff that I want to see. So, my favorite bit from aside from the obvious major kind of story elements, Sid's my favorite character in Final Fantasy VII. And I love the story of him and his failed science project going into space.
Isn't he, from what I remember, though, like really abusive to her, though? I think they might adjust that slightly.
Like, well, so A, I'm interested to see what his relationship with Shearer is like, because it's like, it is part of what makes Sid who Sid is. And I want to see them find a way, in the same way that they found a way to make the cross-dressing not feel weird and creepy in Remake. I want to see how they create Sid as this grumpy, quite sort of horrible character in many ways, but he's also weirdly endearing in an odd way, and I want to find them navigate that.
He's got like an event that happened to him that he's allowing to dictate the rest of his life, and he uses that to take it out on everybody else, specifically one person right next to him. But how do you also make him extremely likable?
I'm really interested to see, because, you know, we know that it's going to end at the Forgotten Capital, which means they will have to do Rocket Town on the way. And we've seen so many bits in the trailers already that indicate that they're going that way. Like seeing like the Midgar Zolom and stuff like that, which is following that path through.
I will say that they have said on record that some things are going, the orders are going to be changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, and potentially, I'm just thinking of the chain of events that need to lead to it. Because I feel like maybe Sid could be something that they hold to the next game.
Maybe he's someone that you meet, but you don't actually recruit until.
I mean, I 100% think they're like, because they've already said Vincent isn't a playable character. So I think we've seen all the playable. I think K-Sif is the last playable character we'll get to play as. Not that I have any desire to play as that character, like I did in the original.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, I couldn't really tell from the trailer, but it doesn't sound like it's got. For a while, Kate's have had like an Irish, was it an Irish or a Scottish?
Scottish, yeah. Scottish. And do you know what? It's mad. We're really getting a Final Fantasy hole here.
Yeah.
As a kid, I never really thought about him being the cat on the top.
You thought it was the Mog.
I thought it was the big Mog thing. And now seeing that little cat talk, it's just like, oh yeah, it was always the cat all along. Well,
well, it was the cat all along. I'm really looking forward to this because a lot of this is new to me.
What I will say after seeing like both the trailer and reading, you know, your coverage and Bo's coverage as well, is it's actually more of a sequel than I expected. I just thought it was, everything was going to be the same, but it was just going to be in the new locations.
Yeah.
I thought the first game had established what the combat, what the mechanics were and stuff like that. And when I've been reading all this, like, there's these new synergy moves, there's this new, like, revenge meter for Red 13, there's different types of potions, there's potion crafting.
Yes, but I would say, like, all of that, when I was playing, felt largely superfluous. Like, ultimately, I felt like I was playing the same thing.
I didn't think it was going to be in there to begin with. So the fact that it is there and is potentially, you know, when you've only played an hour.
And it's nice to have another thing to select.
Yeah.
But I did feel like, and I think it's a problem with the Final Fantasy VII Remake combat, was I did feel like every fight I have to spend good 30 seconds just smashing square.
Right,
until we can actually start the fight, until I can do things. Whereas, like, in the original, I'd always like to, right, I'm going to launch off with a big barrage, or I'm going to, you know, start off, try and weaken them, or cast a spell over here, or cast barrier or something like that. And in this one, it's like, well, you just have to mash for a bit until I build up my meter.
Yeah.
And some of the smaller enemies, they literally die so quickly, there's no time. Yeah. So it's like, okay, I'm just mashing square quite a lot. However, like, it was such a small amount of time I got to play at it. I will say there's some weird stuff as well. I mean, like, this
That's
game...
That's what I want, though.
The original game was, well, do you want this? So this, right, when you're climbing up Mount Nibu... In the original game, Mount Nibu is, like, three different paths, and you fight some enemies, and then you're there, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have your conversations. Because it's a flashback scene, you're just trying to get to the scenes. Where in this one, it's quite stretched out, and there's a lot more to it. There was a segment where there was just, like, this Mako ether in the air, and it wouldn't let me access the elevator until it had all gone. So I had to get, like, this giant Hoover, and I had to push it around, and it's like... You've sucked up 20%.
Okay, yeah,
you've
that sucked up 70%. Weird. When I thought it sounded weird, I thought like crazy weird characters, not mundane activities.
I'm sure there'll be that as well. But then there's things like that that just feel like, what is this really here for? It feels like it's arbitrarily just trying to stretch the section out.
This is like the climb to the plate in Remake. Yeah. The climb to the plate takes a 3-minute section and turns it into at least 40 minutes.
Sometimes that doesn't need to be the case.
No.
And I wonder what the rationale is there. Do they think we need to make every section more meaty?
I would rather have new sections than have a section that I know that when you've already played that bit and you know what it should be, it feels long. It's a bit like, you know how if you've watched like a film and suddenly they turn that film into a television show and you feel like you're going through episodes and episodes to get to what should be just an hour into this thing, but yet you're 3 hours in and you're still not there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. And then also, I mean, Cardiff, I imagine you'll very much enjoy the Gold Saucer, which is a theme park, basically, that's in this world. And they have tons of mini games in there.
I'm all about the mini games.
However, there is there's one, I was thinking about this the other day, there's one mini game that they haven't showed anything for yet, which is like a real-time strategy game.
Ooh.
Called Fort Condor. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how is that?
Oh, I've heard of...
are they going to expand upon that in this one?
Well, the Fort Condor stuff was in Integrade, isn't it?
Oh, Integrade, that's...
Was it?
So Fort Condor, they did it as a mini game in the Yuffie chapter.
I do not remember
of the DLC.
That. I played it, but I don't remember it.
So I would assume either they'll do like a expanded version of that for it, or it'll just be in.
Honestly, it was like one of my least favourite parts of the original game. But I'm... Part of me worries that they're going to really expand it this time.
Yeah.
But from the original game, it wasn't... you were only forced into doing it in the second disc, I think.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do it the first time around. You could for fun. Mm-hmm. Like. But yeah, there's a little fighting mini game. There's a motorbike, snowboarding. And there's all sorts.
I want to see what the snow... I reckon they'll go full to town on the snowboarding.
Yeah. I want cool boarders. Just give me cool boarders.
I'm very excited to play this. Is that what, February at the moment is the release
date? Yeah, February 20 something.
Yeah. That's not too far away. I thought this game would be much.
And they're saying 100 hours as well. Which
we'll see about that.
Yeah.
That's if you do every mini game to completion and every little collect everything.
But I can imagine there's so much to explore. And like, we know for a fact they're going over two continents. in this game, mm-hmm. going on to a third continent, actually. So there is a lot of ground to cover here.
Hopefully they don't feel the need to pad it out too much enough. There's already so much to cover, but you never know.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Another game I cannot wait for, which is much closer, a month away now, is Alan Wake 2. I've already kind of rabbited on about this game, how much I can't wait to play it. And me and Matt, we recently went to Remedy in Finland for an IGN First, our month-long like cover stories that we do. Got a load of features already up online and a couple more to come next week. But this game just continues to be very exciting to me. But you're the one who recently did a hands-on preview, Matt, of a section no one else in the world has yet got to play, mm-hmm. I believe, or at least write about. At Gamescom, I talked about the Alan Wake section we saw and how the Dark Place is this weird, haunted New York. But you got to play a whole mission from Saga's perspective, the FBI agent, and how much more that side of the game is much more like a Resi or a Silent Hill sort of game.
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting. Certainly, obviously, the camera perspective and even like the UI mm-hmm. is straight Resident Evil remake territory. And
the way the shooting feels.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in many ways, I cannot blame them for it at all because mm-hmm. those Resident Evil remakes are masterclasses in design. So absolutely no beef with them for that.
And how to make money as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is, whereas the Alan Wake stuff that we kind of spoke about at Gamescom has got this sort of like trapped in psychedelia sort of feel where everything's kind of like changing in front of you and you're physically using your mind to change the environment. Yeah. This is obviously much more grounded and you can tell immediately where the touchstones for this is. The moment I started playing, it's like, obviously, there's the Twin Peaks element that fueled the original game. It's a weird little town that you're going to.
Established by like these Finnish settlers who are kind of still there and all little quirky characters.
Yeah, this was... So the game is set in Bright Falls. You still go there, which is obviously its homage to David Lynch. This is like, well, we want to do our Finnish version of Twin Peaks. So it's down the road from Bright Falls. It's a town called Watery, settled by Finnish settlers. And it's got a lot of that, like, you know, you're walking down the road and there's just a guy in a towel standing outside of a sauna.
Yeah.
It's like proper, like, old dude with his slightly saggy man
like,
boobs.
Funny as well, because, like, when we were playing the game at Remedy in their sauna lounge, which, of course, Remedy in their studio have a full sauna that staff can use at any point.
Since this is a town in America that's just like very
there was settled
Finnish.
Yeah, in the what late was it like late 9th century I think
something
they said
like
by
that.
Finnish settlers who yeah went over from Europe and yeah settled
in the same
in
way
town.
That almost everywhere in America
but they maintain their culture
yeah there's like little quirks yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, fair enough. But but yeah, and there's it's got that delightful Remedy element in that there's these two bananas entrepreneurs called the Koskela brothers mm-hmm. that kind of run like a caravan park at this place, but they also run this place called Coffee World, which okay. is a coffee-themed theme park with like a ride called like the Percolator.
Like and, World sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, very much kind of in that vibe. But they have TV adverts for all their stuff
oh,
that's done
so
in live
funny.
Action. Oh, so okay. it's a lot like, you know how in Control when you see the videos from Dr. Darling? Mm. They're done like that, but it's the two actors that are voicing the Koskelas in it doing it in real
that's
life.
It's a very Remedy thing, isn't
very,
it?
Very, very Remedy. So it's got a lot of that. And I think this is already starting to set up this idea. It's a very different game from Alan Wake 1. In that Alan Wake 1 is a game where you run from A to B through a forest shooting gangbusters of people.
Yeah.
Whereas the entire opening of this... So how long did we play for, Cardi? Like maybe an hour and a half in this mission?
Maybe
a little bit shorter.
Hour, yeah, maybe.
And I'd say the first kind of 15 minutes of this, I didn't shoot a gun at all because I'm just chatting to the locals right. about this. And because Saga is a detective and you're there, you're not there with Alex Casey, who's your FBI partner. He's kind of elsewhere. So you're on your own in this town, just chatting with people. And that gives it that sort of slightly more Silent Hill vibe in that this place feels a bit off kilter. There's a bit of a vibe here, but also... I'm just chatting to people. I'm getting an idea
well,
for the detective
true
work.
Detective vibe as well, isn't that, it?
So that's what, you know, you start to see these touch points, True Detective. And for example, the way Saga's gameplay works is you do obviously get objectives like you do in every other game. But quite frequently, the way those objectives unlock is you have to do quote-unquote detective work before that begins. Yeah. And that happens in Saga's mind place, which is that classic Sherlock Holmes, like, she goes into her head where she can see all the evidence she's collected from across okay. the journey and she can piece them together. So, for example, I can't remember what the objective was, but we couldn't progress anywhere because it wasn't giving us an objective. But then if you profile the Koskela brothers, which is you go in her mind to a desk and sit down and select their case file, and she starts thinking through all of the things she knows right. about these people, and you get to hear, like... what she's doing is, you know, the profiling system that Will Graham uses in the Hannibal books, where she goes into their minds to try and work out what is their thought process, what would they be doing? And when you learn something through that profiling system, that triggers your next objective. Right. So it's forcing you to do the kind of
it's
FBI
not like,
work.
It's not complex puzzles. So
no.
This isn't like really like you have to work this out and like work your way at yourself. It's fairly like you know... square peg goes in square hole sort of thing. It's not too obtuse.
Yeah, the profiling one is the most simple of it in terms of like you meet someone, you don't know how they fit into what your story is, you profile them and Saga goes, ah, they did this, so therefore I should go and do this. But the more involved stuff is this case, there's a case board on a wall, which is the classic, you know, the Always Sunny loads twine and stuff like that.
Pepe Silva, yeah.
And basically as you're going around, you're constantly like collecting data and evidence. So it'll be like, I found this murder weapon, I found this weird footprint, I found these people that told me about this. And essentially the board is effectively split into, as you say, holes, and you need to find the right shaped clues that go into the right shaped holes. And when you find that, Saga's like, okay, I've put two and two together. Yeah. This gives me this mission objective.
And you're always going to get like the right thing. It's not like L.A. Noire where you could guess wrong and you fail the mission. Like it'll tell you, oh yeah, this is right. You're never going to fail and like get the wrong idea, really.
So that's kind of like how the detective sort of side of it works. And I'm a bit up and down on whether that, quite honestly, the UI gets in the way a little bit in the sometimes, at least in the bits that I was playing, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is definitely a clue to do with motives. And you start trying to put it in the motive section of the board. And Saga's just like, nah, I don't think this goes here. And so you end up having to just choose every one of them to make it go. And then she's like, oh, yeah, this works. And now you get objective.
One of the main things they were actively working on when we were there, though. So I feel like that'll be in a better place by the time
we
launch.
We had actually left Finland, Remedy had said, we've found another way that we think we're going to do this. That's cool. Which is really
cool. They were
cool
watching us because we're basically the only people outside us to have played the game.
Them
yeah, they it, were yeah. like, you could, yeah, the QA person was in the room basically going, okay, yeah, they struggled here. And asking us, oh, how did you work that out? Just mm-hmm. like, it was like, I love just that. To make sure we weren't guessing.
Yeah, well, like, it was interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I think the detective stuff will be in a better place by the time it comes to release, but I like the vibe it gives you. I still think there's a little bit of clumsiness in it. But that takes us into... Saga goes into a forest, basically, where you've got to go... You're looking for a set of keys. The Koskela brothers have said, oh, there's these keys to this trailer you need to get into. They're at Coffee World. They're at our theme park. You go after dark, basically, and you know that they're in the gift shop. And so you start trekking through what's much more of an Alan Wake-style forest. And this is where kind of like the combat comes in. Obviously, this forest has got a few enemies in. Way less than there was in Alan Wake 1. Each enemy is designed to be like... It's an assailant that's leaping on you from
maybe
out
like,
the forest.
What, two or three in a 15-minute stretch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. And they do things like the first one we came across... had like an ability that he could split in two, so now you're fighting two of them at the same time. But it's still based on that very classic. It uses the old school Alan Wake thing in that they're all protected by shadow shields, so you use a torch to burn that off and then you shoot them. But the cadence of combat is much more like Resident Evil.
How so these like the Alan section and the Sarg section sound very different. I understand there's some sort of system for switching between them.
So like you can, basically there's points. Normally, I think it's going to be at the end of each chapter. You can go into these break rooms at the end of missions and you can basically choose, do you want to carry on as Saga or Alan or do you want to switch? And these stories are happening parallel to each other. So you can play, I'm not sure if it's all the way to the end, but long stretches as one character in, from one perspective if you want. Or you can switch in between and it's kind of like, they want you to play it the way you want to play it. But I think the hint is every time there is a break room, it's kind of a soft suggestion of, oh, maybe you want to switch in between.
My concern is enjoying one section way more than another.
I don't
one.
Know if that will be the case from what we've seen. They're both
certainly
very
different. I got a lot of good vibes from both sides of it. Yeah. I really liked the oddness of Alan's side. Yeah. And I think that's arguably the most interesting. But the Saga side draws on a lot of things I like. It's the more Resident Evil style.
That one sounds more interesting to me.
It's got the more of the... the profiling system is Hannibal, down to the fact that if you've seen the Hannibal TV show, when Saga sits down at her desk to profile people, her head is framed by deer antlers, which is exactly the symbolism that they use in the Hannibal show. So it wears its detective horror on its sleeve.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as much as... It plays well and it looks visually just
phenomenal.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It is the Remedy side of it that I love, the weirdness and the way this is the first. Well, Control was technically the first, but this is the first game to join the connected universe they've been building, and just the weirdness. Like in Alone, if you've seen the gameplay we've put up or the preview Matt did, Artie the janitor for Control is just doing karaoke in the local bar in this village, and it's just so weird. I don't know if, do you remember in Control he's always saying like, oh, I'm off on my vacation. I don't know, is this his vacation going to water?
And it's like the weirdness is definitely there in the Saga stuff because that's where the stuff to Control turns up. Like obviously there's that mention of Artie there, but also we know that that's in the real world and the Federal Bureau of Control in the real world. So the potential to see perhaps more characters or more concepts from Control is definitely going to be in the Saga
it's
side.
It's just like, we've already seen like some weird bits that some people may even consider spoilers. I don't think they're spoilers. Like in the, we recently put up a clip with Alex Casey, who is the fictional detective from Alan Wake's novels, who is basically Max Payne, looks like Max Payne, sounds like Max Payne. And that would be like quite a big thing for a lot of games, but that happens really early. That's the first Alan Wake chapter, I think, that happens.
Oh, is it?
And that means there's just going to be so much more weirdness to this game, and I cannot wait.
I got one question. Does Saga internal monologue?
A bit, but not as much as Alan Wake, because I know you hate an internal monologue.
I just don't like it in games in general, but the idea of a Max Payne character and a mm-hmm. Alan Wake character being right next to each other, just in, mm-hmm. having an internal monologue off.
She does it, especially when she's like looking at the case board, but that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't mind that too much. But it's a more just describing.
No, it's not like, you know, in the original where he's walking arrows, like Alan walked down the road.
And he's like, this is just like one of my novels. Yeah. It's not my favorite like Stephen King book.
And I'm like, the Alan Wake sections, he does do that a bit, but yeah. I like that vibe. I think it's
I get it. Like some people like it. For me, it just it grates on me slightly. So. Which leads me, all the things you're describing about the two leads me to believe I'm going to enjoy the cyber side of it way more. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, we'll see.
We've obviously not been able to play Alan. We've been able to watch like this 40-minute section of Alan. But what I would say is all the stuff that I know that you like is in the saga side, because there's also the puzzle side of Resident Evil's in it. But I'd say these puzzles are better than anything I've played in Resi.
Oh, really?
Because, there is the standard Resi-style puzzle of, so to get into that area where the keys are, it's a case of this door is locked with a padlock and you do a bit of detective work by you read there's a maintenance log next to it, and that gives you the impression of, oh, someone on there is talking about the last time the lock was jammed, we had to use a screwdriver to break it open. And then there's another note from like a man that's like, oh, I've been to fix the percolator ride. Yeah. I left the screwdriver there. So you're like, okay, go and get screwdriver, use screwdriver to open lock. That is a classic Resident Evil, use weird item to open lock.
Yeah.
But there are way more puzzles in this that require much more like thought. So for the example that we saw was you find by one of the break rooms, actually, a locked box, which has got some cultist gear in it. So there's this mad cult, the cult of the tree, which is your like main antagonist. And they've left a crossbow in this box. And you're like, okay, a crossbow, great, new weapon. But it's got a three-digit, you know, the three-digit like padlocks on them where you rotate the dials. And all you've got is that to go on. And what it is you have to study the area next to it, which is a crossbow firing range. But there are numbers on different targets and there are different amounts of arrows that have been fired into them. And you have to study that and work out from there what the three digits
are. There's
an
extra layer to puzzle. It's not just like, here's a code. It's like you have to work out the code from looking at
what's so weird about that, what you just described is that sounds like sometimes what you think the solution on a Resident Evil puzzle is going to be, and then you realize, oh, it's actually way more simple. It was just written on a note and I didn't read it. But the amount of times I've gone in a room and like I'm counting random things and looking at numbers,
it's a good balance of never being too obtuse, but you actually feel like, oh, I worked that out.
There's an excellent version, which I won't say what the full solution is, but later on there's in the demo that we played, there was a bit where you got told where the they were symbols on a padlock rather than numbers. And you got told where the first symbol was. And it was to do with it's in the bottom of a coffee cup. So I'm going around looking at coffee cups, which one's got the symbol in it? You're at a theme park where coffee cups are part of like the amusements. And so from there, you then start to work out. And even when I found it, then finding the other two parts of it were another lateral thinking exercise, rather than it just being like, oh, I'll use this and the other two are written on the other side of the coffee cup. More to it than that.
I can't wait to play it. I can't wait. We're only a month away from Alan Wake 2. Cannot wait for that. Sorry, too many games coming out. I did say we'd talk about Lies of P, but I know you've got a meeting in 15 minutes,
Dale. I do, yes.
So maybe we save Lies of P for next week, if that's okay.
Sure,
do you want to actually give us a 30-second opinion? Do you like it?
It's really good. It is. it's very much just steals everything from Soft, but it does it very well. So I think it is good.
Is it funny? And I want it to be like weird and funny. Does it do that with Pinocchio, or is it quite?
It's like, because it's fucked up puppets.
I don't want it to be
po-faced.
I want it to have a bit of humour.
It's definitely dark fairy tale, but because all of the enemies are like weird chimney sweeps and weird fucked up clowns and giant police officers with almost comedy batons, it's got a sort like the splicers in BioShock are a bit like fucked up weird.
Nice. It's Geppetto, the final boss. That's what.
No, but he is in there. He is your dad, but there's clearly something sinister to Geppetto.
I might give it a go. It's on Game Pass, right? I might give it a go at some point. Who knows? Anyway, no Ender Search this week. Those of you that hate the theme, you'll be glad to hear that. I quite like the theme, but there you go.
Shall I read a piece of it? Actually, I know I'm third on the feedback running order, but it is about the theme.
Oh, go on then. IGN_UK feedback @IGN.com. If you want to emails about anything. But Dale, what, go on then.
This is from Ed Weber. So obviously last week we had somebody, I can't remember the name, I'm sorry, but they wrote in saying that they didn't like the Inner Search feed.
His name was Rob, I believe.
Was it Rob? Okay. And we said, Rob, you are the outlier. Everyone else loves it. Yeah. Turns out not so much. So this is from Ed. He says, hello, IGN podcast fellows. Hope you're well. And having never written before, I felt compelled to provide feedback and to say thank you to Rob for his loathing of the Endless Search feedback theme.
So rude.
I know, right? I firmly side with Rob that the theme is the most grating auditory experience for reasons I've never been able to pin down. Rather than hark on the Endless Search theme debate and begin a discussion that could split the country in twain, I want to offer a solution that is an admirable... I want to offer a solution that is as admirable at the Endless Search itself that has now allowed me to not only make peace with the song, but create my own version of the Endless Search I like to play. The game is simple in premise. With the 30-second skip function on most portable podcast listening devices, I now try to gauge the build-up to an intro and how long the preamble or segue will take to allow me to press the 30-second skip to avoid all the ear nausea of the song, but not... all the ear noise of the song, but not miss the start of the game. A perfect sync is as satisfying as a perfect parry in Elden Ring. So Rob, don't hate, don't avoid, adapt and play the game and enhance your podcast experience.
I agree, don't hate. I like the song. Yeah. Well, there you go. Maybe we'll play it at the end, the last piece of music at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we should totally do that. No. You ain't getting away with it.
I would do that, but I didn't mention this for Phantom Liberty. Some of the music, especially the soundtrack that, for the final like fight in this game, unbelievable music.
Okay.
And the end credits of Phantom Liberty.
We will say
unbelievable.
We were talking about this earlier because we had a couple of people writing in saying they don't like the tune, but we know there's a lot of you out there that do like it as well. If you don't like it, make something better.
It's
send
like
it
20
in.
To 30 seconds. Just get on with it. Frankly,
yeah, is it? So the theme tune started life as an audio as a submission from one of our listeners.
Definitely, yeah.
So if you think you can do a better one, if you want to change this into a new era for the Endless Search, send one in that's better.
To be fair, when we did get it written for us, we were very much into talking about garage at the time.
Yeah. We're not a UK garage podcast anymore, are we?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just put the cyberpunk theme and have me saying Endless Search over the song.
I want to know also though, if you really like the theme, make sure you write in and defend your position as well. Because so far we've got a couple of haters and we need to flip the script on that.
Cool. Thank you for that. I've got an email here from Rohit Sankaraneni. He says, hi team. Firstly, I really enjoy your podcast. Try not to cringe too much at that, Cardi. I don't mind the praise. It's not me who doesn't mind the praise.
Everyone's
going
to keep writing in thinking you don't like the praise.
Well,
I'm just
fine
to
wind
you up.
Tell me I'm great. He says he's missed the food chat a bit though.
We did chat about
We did open with sausage sandwiches this week. So, you know, have you tried these? Oh, what are they called? They're little like French, like white chocolate cakes, but they've not got white chocolate on them. They're white chocolate flavoured. I think they're called like Saint Michel or something.
No idea.
Oh, treat yourself. They're so good. They're like a nice little Madeira cake that's kind of got a white chocolate flavour to it.
That sounds nice.
They're really good, and I'm going to have to look up. I've probably forgotten completely what they're actually
called.
Do
you know what I've become obsessed with?
Yeah, go on.
In the last month is paninis. And don't get me wrong, I always ate a panini, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But now, in the last, I guess I worked out they were a very easy lunch for me to make. Because I don't really like cold sandwiches, I always like hot sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I work from home, and I've just become obsessed with making paninis with like pepperoni, mozzarella and ham in it.
Nice.
And I have it like almost every day.
I'm
so
happy for you.
Yeah.
I found them. They are indeed called the Saint Michel Soft Galette. White chocolate cake.
Delicious.
I think you get 6 of them for £1.80 here. Very nice.
That's some good food chat.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, Rohit also says, anyway, main reason I'm writing in is because on the most recent episode opening, you were speaking about Dell's paternity leave, which I'm expected to go on to in
Congratulations.
November.
Congratulations.
He says my own, not his. So he's not coming to help you
mine.
Out. You mentioned Power Wash Simulator as a good game for that period, given baby duties. Mm-hmm. Are there any other games you'd recommend as being good for that time that I should consider, i.e. easy to pause and play in 15-minute chunks and still get something out of it? I'm playing Sea of Stars at the moment, but I've almost finished that. Other games I thought would be good, but had I not already played them, are Hades, Inscription, Dredge, and Ghost Runner. Respect the Sea, Gravediggers, and all the rest. P.S. Also, funny story, when I started listening to the podcast, I used to think that you were saying respect the sea as in C for Cardi. And I was confused for ages since Simon seemed like such a humble guy.
Why is this such a common note that people say about respect the sea? Like, not like, understanding we're talking about a lot the big people blue that, wobbly thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things people have thought it stand for. Some of them much more unsavory. Yeah. But am I humble?
I don't know, mate. You sound like you want to do a whole
definitely
don't bit,
know. Yeah. Definitely, it's not respect me. It's in respect the sea, the ocean.
Yes, the ocean is what we've always referred
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So basically games you can play in like 15 minutes. I mean, if you're into football or see football manager, yeah. FIFA.
Honestly though, but like I've been trying to play Cyberpunk this week with my baby, but the gigs in Cyberpunk are absolutely perfect. Like I said, they're little contained stories and you can just play one and then pause it. The main story probably takes you a significant
chunk. I suppose like roguelites and turn-based ones, they're the ones, aren't they? You can pause them at any time or like short runs.
Big complex stories that you want you're involved in, just things like, that are very gameplay focused, I think.
Yeah, obviously Slay the Spire is a good one for that sort of thing. 15
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, well,
I've been
playing a bit of Mortal Kombat 1 before work for the last couple of days, and I've just been
nice little wake up routine. Just,
in 15 minutes, you can get quite a lot done in Mortal Kombat. Like you can probably play about a good 10 or 15 rounds because they are basically a minute each.
Yeah. It depends what sort of game you're looking for, really. Like I would just say avoid big story games. You know, like focus on things that are.
Is it there? But he has been playing Sea of Stars, which also Chained Echoes is very similar to Sea of Stars. If you want more of that, and I guess you can probably pause that, but that does seem a bit much for a baby.
Yeah.
Racing games, can't go wrong with them. Yeah. Like maybe Forza Horizon 5 or something.
Yeah, there's just so many. How about is Armored Core one you can play in small chunks?
Not the boss missions, but the actual kind of mission missions are actually super short for the most part.
Yeah.
Or maybe something like Grifflands if you want like something that's a bit like Slay the Spire in terms of like those card matches, but there's a narrative and a story to it that you can then progress with night after night.
I would say avoid games that aren't really pausable. Anything like online or when you're in a session.
Or a Kojima game.
Anything like, because I used to play, we all used to play tons of Rainbow Six Siege. I can't imagine trying to play that now. And then all of a sudden the baby decides he wants to make noise. I'm like, fuck, I'm going to die.
Absolutely no From Software games because there's no pausing during those
there
bosses.
Avoid those.
Yeah. And definitely Power Wash. Last email from Matt. From a Matt.
Yeah. From Matt Eddy, who says, hi, IGN UK team, long-time listener, etc. and so on. I was hoping you could settle a debate. My fiancé, not a gamer, was watching me play Red Dead Redemption 2 and questioned why I use guides to collect items, saying she thought I was cheating. I explained that it was a time saver for me and that I didn't see the problem. She then had the cheek to question why I wouldn't reload my save after I died and lost my beaver carcass that I was carrying on my horse.
We've all done that.
I explained that this was essentially save scumming and that this was generally frowned upon during gaming. She was having none of it, and we had a spirited debate as to which was worse. I love her more than anything, but she's dead wrong on this, right? Is save scumming a worse form of cheating than using guides?
I don't think using a guide for, especially in a world that big and that just like anything could be anywhere. Like there's no real, like if you're going around trying to collect all the cards in that game, there's no way naturally, unless you've got all the time in the world, you're going to find like all the cards in that
game. It depends what you get, how you get fun from it, right? Is the fun the part of the discovery, or is the fun the achievement of like achieving, or you want to get to the end of it?
I don't use guides very often. I occasionally do if it is a big like sprawling RPG, like Baldur's Gate. Occasionally, I checked because I was like, I feel like if I do something here, it's more to check if I do this, is it going to do complete opposite of what I actually want and lock me out of stuff? And I finished my Baldur's Gate playthrough on 996 save files, so I did a bit of. I was just paying F5 like every 5 minutes.
How big are those save files?
They're not very big.
It's like 10 gigs worth of saves.
But yeah, just in case. Yeah. But I don't do what you want. But I don't. If we're talking about on different levels, I think save scumming is probably worse than cheating than using guides.
I also think
do what you want.
Do what you want. Yeah.
I also,
however
say,
you
like,
enjoy games, enjoy it that way.
I've never really considered the idea of save scumming to because you lost a beaver carcass. Like, save scumming is a thing that quite often comes into, like, you made a massive choice and then you realize you made the wrong one.
Yeah,
and because you refuse to adhere by the choice you made, you save scum and go back. I think losing a beaver carcass isn't... No, I'm not going to be praying to the Lord and to also, cleanse my soul.
Single-player games,
it.
Do whatever you want. Like, cheating in multiplayer games, no way. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Single-player games, offline, who cares?
You do it as long as you're having fun, that's all.
Exactly. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com if you want to write us in. Dale, you've got a meeting in 1 minute
one
now.
1 minute, yeah.
Well, let's bang on some cyberpunk action music and say goodbye, shall we?
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Goodbye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.